You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's clothing that bolsters your brand identity and creates a unique connection between your brand, your employees, and your customers. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a supplier of branded apparel to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help you and your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action. From logo application to online ordering, Lands' End Outfitters offers seamless solutions that give you peace of mind, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.
Yeah, like you said, goal line clearances, a lot of good play. Feisty at times, think Arsenal's foul count is higher than Chelsea.
Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
I could never see myself putting on another jersey.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
11 minutes past nine. I'm delighted to say Graeme Hunter is with us. Graeme, good morning to you. How are you?
This is my best piece and I'm putting it forward.
Ah, excellent. Where are you? What's the sign behind you there?
Yeah, the sign says yes to ball games. I don't know if I can tilt it properly.
Oh, yeah, excellent.
It's the Dennis Law Legacy Trust in Aberdeen. They went to the council and went, "You're completely mad. This is the city where Scotland's only golden ball Ballon d'Or winner comes from. And you're putting up no to ball games." And they negotiated with them. And they got them not only taken down, but converted into yes to ball games. If you haven't done a little feature on the Dennis Law Legacy Trust and the work they do with street sport in Aberdeen, I promise you it will be rewarding for you in the future.
Very good. Were you there to see the unveiling of Jim Goodwin?
Yeah, it's not a statue. He's a proper manager. No, work in Barcelona kept me away from Jim's debut at Motherwell, but I'm going to be there this Friday when there is an unveiling of the Sir Alex Ferguson statue at Pittodrie. Fergie's going to be back at Pittodrie for the first time in, I don't know, gazillions of years. And then we're going to beat the Arabs, Dundee United, the following day. So, yeah, if you want to talk Aberdeen, I'll keep you going all day.
Very good. The bit of the Ferguson documentary where he's in Aberdeen is brilliant cinema. It's absolutely, the footage is class. Just his attitude, just his personality, just the fact that they're all training on like a park pitch. It's absolutely sensational.
Well, they're training on the Red Ash car park opposite Pittodrie, which is where the Bayern Munich scout, who then became their press chief, Marcus Herwig, for 25 years, saw them with his nose pressed up against the railings, looking at what was basically, I don't know if you've got Red Ash in Dublin or Ireland, but it's just like hard packed just before cement stuff that's lumpy and bumpy and can take cars been parked there every, you know, 3-4 days. And they either trade there or on the beach, because until very recently they didn't have a dedicated training ground. And a Bayern Munich man in the Cup Winners Cup winning year of 1983 was sent over. He was one of the first PR men in Europe, and he was asked to do scouting as well. And Fergie saw him with his nose in that very space you're talking about with the plane where you couldn't slide in, otherwise you'd take the skin right off your leg. And who are you? What are you doing? Marcus Herwig explains, "I'm the Bayern Munich man. I've come to spy on you." Fergie's like, "Well, don't be standing here. Get inside to Pittodrie, get a cup of tea." He sits down and he chats with him. He says, "Well, how long are you staying for?" He said, "I'm coming down to your game at Parkhead," which we won the next day. He said, "You're staying at a B&B in Aberdeen?" Marcus Herwig, the Bayern man, "Yes." He said, "Well, get ready at 7. We'll swing by in the team bus. We'll pick you up and we'll drive you down to Glasgow." So that wasn't in the film, but it should have been. And Jason Ferguson, who made the film with his dad, did a really good job. If you are two family members involved in making a documentary, normally you'd imagine the things that will stand out are the things that are missed out. And instead, he got his dad as open and as honest and as moving as I've ever seen him in my life. And I first met him in, I don't know, 79. So
I didn't know about the row with his father either. That bit was,
it was brutal. It was brutal, yeah.
I can see where it came from, and I can understand that's the character. And it certainly was, it was like, I you know, because we all go, "Oh, at some point himself and Roy Keane will, There'll be a rapprochement. No, there won't. When you watch the documentary, there won't be any rapprochement. This guy.
No, I tell you, you know, I didn't know the details of the row at all, but I do remember Alex's brother Martin telling me about growing up and the degree to which having his dad's favour was so important to young Alex Ferguson. And Martin, who's younger than Alec by, I don't know, what is it, a year or 2 years, said that it's now famous because Alex talked about it so much that their father was a shipbuilder. And they lived in Govan near to the yards. And young Martin would collect anything balsa, any lollipop stick, anything, so he could craft it together into a ship. And as a little one, 4 or 5 years old, he built this ship out of any piece of wood he could get. And his dad came out from the yards, and Martin went to his dad, look, Dad, look what I built. I built one of your ships. That's good, son. That's really good. Good work, son. Pat on the head, off through to get his tea. And Alec pinched the ship off his brother there and then and stamped on it to smithereens because Martin had taken Dad's favour. So this is why Martin referred to Alec as the Führer for many years.
Wow, that is a great story. Let's talk a little bit about Barcelona. Looking at the team that was picked over the last week or two, I'm like, oh, this is Championship Manager stuff where he's just picked whatever he can get. They've acquired. And then the team starts to play really good football and score loads of goals. I'm like, okay, well, maybe Xavi knows a bit more about team building than we suspected. It's been unorthodox. Like the signing of Aubameyang, it looked like trouble, but maybe Xavi just feels like he knows what the mercurial footballer, having played with a gazillion of them throughout his life, he feels like he can manage those players.
No, listen, no, I think you're right. First of all, it's needs must. Normal criteria don't apply. If you're arguing because he scored a hat-trick and he looks happy, Aubameyang is not the guy who puts 4,000 Swarovski crystals in his lime boots or jets off to Milan for a pal's birthday, which he did at Dortmund when the manager said you can't go, or comes back late from the trip to France that Arteta finally bins him for. Because, you know, it is underreported at the moment, and probably correctly so, that Arsenal effectively, if they didn't sack him, it's the next best thing in legal terms. He's stripped the captaincy, he's dropped, he's left behind when they go on warm-weather training, and they let him go, an asset. He is an asset, was an asset. They let him go for free. And this is Aubameyang who... I don't think as ever. I am unaware of any manager other than Arteta saying I've had enough. What is clear is that Aubameyang lives with a jaunty swagger about my goals and my pace mean that in certain areas I can do what I like, and I can do what I like because really the things I'm doing are not outrageous things that affect my fitness. They're just me living hard, living because I'm rich, living because I'm born with a gene in me that says, take me or leave me, I don't care. Now, I'd be a hypocrite if I didn't say that I was born with a little bit of that, and I'd be a hypocrite if I just slammed that. But managers will say, there's the line. And Arteta's quote in the latter 2 months of Aubameyang's time at Arsenal about, there are certain players, if they're scoring 35 goals a season, where you have to bend the rules. And he's right. Alec Ferguson, who you're talking about, did it for Cantona. He changed his attitude about dress codes, about jokes, about the, you know, the kung fu kick at Crystal Palace, which the boy deserved, by the way. Aubameyang, Barcelona, is in that state of grace because they didn't have a nine. Now they've got a nine. He's in good nick. He's quick. In terms of athletic prowess, he doesn't look like 32 going on 33. He still looks and behaves like a 27, 28-year-old. Now, on the pitch, that's catnip for Barcelona. They had to have it, irrespective of the fact he got a couple and was accredited with the third, which wasn't his goal, away at Valencia at the weekend. He transforms this team. And you talk about Championship Manager and whatever. The two differences, lads, would be they've signed specific needs. There's no guarantee that Adama is going to stay, and for my taste, he's still a limited player. But the things he does well, one, have improved while he's been in England a lot, and two, in certain games, again, will be catnip to Barcelona. So, and Ferran Torres, the goals will come, his play has been pretty good. The long and short of it is the training has been astonishing. I mean, literally astonishing. We get more access to it when you watch it, the way in which it's like 15th century painting compared to, I don't know, Picasso or Rembrandt. It's a complete change from the last two coaches, particularly under Koeman. It's active, it's witty, it's got the players' minds and athletic endeavours engaged. It's all about speed, quickness of thought, quickness of movement. The changes between the training sessions are short. Everything's intense. There's been a personality change about their working days. And you see that on the pitch gradually, particularly from those players whose talent is absolutely innate, but they lack certain experiences. So what's coming, I said on a podcast I did for the big interview on Friday, somebody's going to get a pasting soon. How is Valencia and Barcelona are not at the stage where they're going to paste everybody because there remain flaws and it remains an early work project. But certain teams throughout the remainder of this season will take pastings because Barcelona are increasingly quick and clever. And when you've got a bench player like Luke de Jong suddenly getting crosses sent into him, again, catnip again, there's resources on the bench, there's a good first 11, and there's just an outstanding atmosphere between the squad and Xavi right now.
That change in the training is very interesting. Is Xavi just bringing what Pep brought? Is that too simplistic? It's just because his CV, I guess, is one line managerial-wise before this. So his experiences, the amount of time he had to be a sponge, I guess, is limited post his playing days in Barcelona. So what's informing this change?
No. Oh, and the objective has similarities to what Pep wanted, what Xavi wants. There are similarities. The training sessions couldn't be more different.
Right.
He came into a side which was hard-bitten, which was experienced, where already you just about knew your best 11 instantly. There were no 17-year-olds dominating like Gabby's doing or 19-year-olds dominating like Pedri's doing. It wasn't a mismatch of jumble sale purchases like Jer was talking about. He came in and went, you lot are underperforming. You lot are under training. It's harsh. And I want positional football. So the stories from St Andrews, that first Pep summer, were about players queuing up to Joan Laporta to say, I'm leaving. I won't be talked to like that. I won't be handled on the, you know, because you both know now, it does not happen at City now because the players are in the mindset and they understand the strategies are established. He was coming on and he was hauling players. I want you a half turn this way. You need half a metre that way. And hands on those players and the way he was talking to them, Abidal, Thierry Henry, Marquez, there was a queue of players going to Joan Laporta going, no, I'm not having this. And then Laporta said, be patient, and it clicked. And Xavi's sessions aren't happy-clappy, Billy Graham, evangelical nonsense. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that he understood that this was a squad which was beaten down, had not a losing mentality, but were becoming accustomed to being crapped on in the papers, performing poorly against big sides. There's a big black cloud over every head. So if you watch it now, it's all inventive stuff where there's constant exercises about individual excellence, about group excellence. So you see lots of pictures from training grounds all around Europe where you go like, here's the winning five. We've played fives today. Or this is the team that won. And this little group. Apart from the strategic tactical stuff and the small-sided games and rondos, what Xavi's doing is building confidence, speed of thought, first touch, teamwork, bonds, friendships, because you both know, all of your viewers know that what you do in the training isn't always reflected in life outside. It's like work here, tolerate something. There were not cliques, but there were groups in that squad who got vastly different nationality, age, experience, and there was no connection. And he's bridging it. It's like putting the synapses together. So, look, you said what informs it. He spent a lot of time at the Aspire Academy in Qatar working on how to inspire players that were less experienced than he was used to, less talented, some at the end of his career. Every one of them in his squad, apart from Santi Cazorla, not having Xavi's knowledge. And he and his brother worked out systems where they could get their concepts across to people without, you know, a pedagogical idea, but in terms of don't show them, do it. and then revise and do it. And you have to engage people. You have to make sure that they're... Listen, at this stage, Xabi has a hard side. He is not a pushover, but he's not Pep. They played together, they won together, but they're very different characters. And I think it takes a loop right back to Arteta, although he's a Basque, was in the same squad as Xabi, left after his year when he was the best foreign player in France at PSG, left Barcelona for Rangers because Xabi, amongst others, were in his way. They look the same, saturnine, dark, similar ages, similar experiences, but completely different in terms of flexibility. Arteta is much more like Pep. It's this way. Very little movement. Xavi's different. It doesn't mean he's soft, but he's clever, and he's in a very difficult situation. And therefore, the progress he's achieved, I don't care whether they, lift the Europa League, which people will say they should do. I'm not that. I spoke to him after the Napoli game. Eh? He saw me and he went, "How's it going, Mackie?" And I was like, "Brilliant, I'm enjoying my football." And he stopped. You know, I'm pleased about that, because what he's getting at the moment are like, "Why aren't you scoring more?" Or this player, that player. I told him the truth. I'm enjoying watching Barcelona after it's been pretty torturous for a couple of seasons, and the club behaviour has been torturous for 5 seasons. It is now, they're just a fun watch. And if they're not your club and they're not your colours and you're attracted to watching English football or the Bundesliga or Serie A, I would tell you, catch them now. It's not 2011 peak Messi, but it is fun.
That sounds good. Everybody's booking flights to Barcelona to go and see the team again. You might get the full game.
Yeah, Koeman's Barcelona, not the perfect time for bucket list stuff.
You wouldn't say.
Can we talk a little bit about Atletico and what's going on with them at the moment? Is this late stage of this era? Is it just a little blip, or is this the bit where they see it a supposedly, I don't want to say superior, but they see a big name riding into town, and they get the band back together, and it's a magnificent seven their way through this tie?
Well, a lot of it depends on, they've got constant trouble with injury and COVID tests. And one of the absolute certainties is that when Jimenez, the Uruguayan, and Savic, who was at City, remember, played together in the defence, Atleti are better. In fact, there's a likelihood that they won't lose. They've only coincided in the team 12 times this season in the league, because of injuries and suspension. And when they play together, generally, you go, "Oh, I recognise this." And look, Jan Oblak hasn't thrown one in, and there are other players are playing with more confidence in the ball because they know who's behind them. Absolute perfection? No, but different class, because Felipe as a central defender isn't good enough. Simply isn't good enough. If Manchester United see Felipe lining up against them tomorrow night, then they should get themselves an extra couple of Stellas out. I would have said that there's a material difference in how sharp Luis Suarez is this season and how well he's served compared to last season. Last season, he belied his age. He was by far the leading scorer. He still couldn't, back last season, outsprint people, play on the shoulder with a high-line defence and run beyond them. No. But he was fired by this revenge idea of, "I'll show Barcelona. I was treated like, I'll show the president. I was treated like rubbish. After all I've given them, I will show them." Now, that fires lots of people. It fires a world-class Uruguayan more than most. That has diminished. Their injury record has been poor. And the worst thing of all is that because of the way in which Cholo Simeone regularly plays three different formations within the one game, the team look confused. They look less than the sum of the parts. And Oblak is having his worst season. Does it suddenly all stiffen and get right for tomorrow night? No, not all of it. They'll be missing players that are unsure if Neymar is going to be fit. Jimenez, they're having to be careful of when he is essential. There's an interview today with Savic saying, "Yeah, we missed Trippier. We didn't expect him to go. We're worse without him." So it's been death by a thousand cuts so far. But one thing you can say for sure, Simeone hasn't helped his own team. This has not been a state of grace year. It has felt like, whether consciously or subconsciously, he has been smoking a cigar. Best paid coach in world football, 2 titles, the most successful Atleti manager ever, new young wife, new young family. There's been a drop of concentration. Point, full stop.
Is that terminal? Is that the end of this relationship? And actually he goes somewhere else, takes a couple of years out, comes back. Like, what's the future for him?
Where is the big question? You know, he's been offered jobs in England, particularly at Chelsea, on numerous occasions. His assistant, who's now departed and gone to other jobs, German Burgos, the goalkeeper in, you know, the double year in 96, and his assistant during the, you know, the vast part of the success at Leti, he could speak English, wanted to go. Jonas Simeone tried and tried and tried to learn English. Couldn't, or hasn't, but couldn't is a useful word. Italy obviously is a place that beckons him. And the two really obvious teams where he played, two of the teams, not the only teams he played in Italy, would be Lazio and Inter. Inter are pretty bust financially. I'm not certain that he fancies it. It would be a salary drop, a massive salary drop. In terms of that renewal thing you were asking about, I think, knowing you two, I think you would do it. I would do it. I would go, yeah, okay, I'm vastly wealthy. A salary drop is not the end of the world if it means renewal, new challenges, an extra part of my CV. I don't think he's motivated by that at the moment. You know, in real terms, he's still a relatively young manager. I stress again that he's got a different now and patently happy family life. And therefore, I don't think he's motivated yet by saying England or Italy. I don't think he's capable of getting across his... Do you remember what Gary Neville said about his time at Valencia? That it took him, you know, a couple of training sessions to realise, I can't get this across through our translator. That's something that applies to many coaches, but it specifically applies to Cholo Simeone. He's a very one-on-one coach with his players. He needs to engage them. It's not simply about the tactics. It's certainly not about him being a martinet. He's demanding. But the one-on-one relationships are what's helped build his Atleti and his image. And at the moment, both the image of the team and the image of Cholo Simeone are diminished. And I don't think so, Jar. But their debt situation is such that if they do not get in the Champions League next season or go to the final, the review will be the sternest in all the, what, 11 years, is it now? 12 years or 11 years that Cholo Simeone's been at Atleti.
It's been a fairly remarkable career. Like, if there's another act, it would be fairly incredible for him to be able to pull that off. I had one last question about the Real Madrid and the Mbappe and the Haaland stuff. It's like, correct me if I'm wrong, but in previous years when they would have been chasing in the Galactico era, we kind of would have known that something was definitely happening by this stage, that there was like a... They let the rumours go out, and the rumour and the power, yeah, and the prestige of the club was so great that it became this kind of unstoppable momentum. That doesn't quite seem to be the case at the moment with Haaland or Mbappe. And maybe I'm wrong. I suppose that's my question is, does it feel like there's an unstoppable momentum behind one of the superstar global strikers coming next season?
Well, I think that if you're talking about them as a joint operation, which Madrid definitely want to do, and Javier Tebas de Liga, the president, said, you know, Madrid will get them both because Juventus and Barcelona haven't got the money. He didn't mention Manchester City or Chelsea in the case of Haaland, which I think was missing out two big candidates. But to do an operation like that would be one of the most extraordinary summers that any club has ever had. To find the money for those two, to persuade both of them to share a dressing room, to share the spotlight, would be a big operation. So I'm not surprised that the idea of getting them both hasn't got that feeling of inevitability right now, particularly while Haaland's injured, and particularly while, you know, they're two pretty distinct cases in that the world wants Erling Haaland, and most of the world are queuing up thinking we can do this deal. The world would love Mbappe. Let's talk about, maybe talking about 6-7 top clubs. And yet there is a feeling of inevitability around the transfer market that unless something untoward happens, Mbappe's going to Madrid. But I take your point still with him in that there are consistent stories, one, about Mbappe having been unimpressed with the way in which Real Madrid played against them last week. And you can understand, because they were embarrassing. My personal opinion is that his entourage will be weighing up whether how many times Carlo Ancelotti can perform like that and still keep his job. In my opinion, knowing Florentino Perez, Carlo Ancelotti, after last week in Paris, is on a booking. Two yellows and it's a red. That's not simply because they lost 1-0, but the image of Real Madrid was genuinely embarrassing. It's a long time since they've played that badly in an important match. And if it undermined Mbappe's feeling about, you know, if the people at Paris Saint-Germain, who allegedly are going to make him by far the most rewarded footballer there's ever been, ever, and they're not saying to him, do you really want to go and play that football? Then you'd be surprised. It would be the right message to be giving him if you want to retain Mbappe. But again, for my taste, I think that Mbappe's mind is largely made up. Absolutely done deal. Maybe not. There's a lot of time to go between now and the summer. But in my opinion, mentally, he's taken a decision. Haaland is a different matter because trying to persuade him to... I think Barcelona, Manchester City and Chelsea have to be candidates for Haaland. Have to be. But the idea that Barcelona are selling him, we will be in the Champions League, we can pay you the wages that Real Madrid are offering you, and we want you to oppose the Mbappe era. You're an outsider. Don't go and join them. Be with us, and we'll go head-to-head with him. We'll go head-to-head with Real Madrid. You'll be the inheritor of the Messi spotlight, not the play, the spotlight. Oppose him. Don't go with Mbappe. That's what they're trying. And who can blame them? It's the right message to give to Haaland. Whether he thinks that he wants to be part of a very junior project with 19-year-olds and 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds, I don't know. But you can see the attractiveness of saying, let's build the new Cristiano Messi across Spain with Mbappe over there and you here. It's a message. It's a spiel.
Yeah, it's like Real Madrid are saying it can be Puskas and Di Stefano, and Barcelona yes. saying you could be the Cruyff of your generation or the Messi.
For sure, when all the pay packets are largely equaled, for a long time now we've been talking about living conditions. What's it like? Do you want to be? Remember Ronaldinho? Ultimately, when who's your man at at Manchester United came back from meeting Paris Saint-Germain and then faxed a different offer, and it all quite kind of broke down. And Sandro Rosé from Barcelona said, Ronnie, do you really want to live in the rain? And Ronaldinho eventually went, no, I don't. And that was 2003. And he went out and said it. That was a factor. So for the longest time, lifestyle has been sold as part of the package when the pay packets are more or less equal. And ego is in there. You know, do you want to go to Messi's club? Do you want to wear the blogger? Equally for Real Madrid, they are saying, as you said, join up. We'll rule the world. You and Mbappe and Benzema, nobody will stop us. It's another twist to Stefano. These are sexy messages. Wouldn't you like to be Erling Haaland right now?
Oh, yeah. That's a good choice to have. Graham, great stuff. Enjoy the unveiling of the statue and your chats with Fergie. Thanks a million.
It's not a statue to me yet.
give it another couple of books. You'll get there.
I like your attitude.
Thanks a million. Enjoy the games.
Cheers.
Yeah. What would you do?
If I was who?
Haaland.
If I was Haaland, I would try and go to Manchester City.
Would you?
Yeah.
But yeah,
the Ronaldinho thing is
soulless. I didn't know this about you, but you're revealing yourself here.
The Ronaldinho thing is different because Ronaldinho has a soul.
Haaland obviously comes from a climate where that won't make that much difference, but maybe, you know, it makes all the more difference. Like, you're going to have to go back and live in Norway at some point. So
yeah, no, if you're talking about purely footballing levels and wanting to win the Champions League next season.
No, we're talking about, like, where do you want to go and be the one where they chant your name 3 decades hence, where you will be forever stitched into the fabric of that great club. This super club mm-hmm. is going to take you and go, we're elevating you beyond. You're like, oh, Man City, that's exactly what I want. What, give me those petrol dollars, back up the Brinks truck.
Where do you want to...
Blue Moon. I always dreamed of being serenaded by Blue Moon.
Yes, because all the other sponsors around Europe are so positive as well. But no, in fairness, I see the point you're making, but also the counterpoint to that is that Manchester City are the best team in Europe, and you could win a Champions League next season, and then you could win another Champions League the season after that. And then, you know what? You're 26, 27, and it's like, oh, Barcelona are good again? I can do 5-6 years here and become a semi-club legend, and everybody will think that I'm... and everybody will think I'm great and I can win a Champions League there as well because they're ready to win.
Then you're secondary though. It's the other people who did it who will be the ones who are remembered most.
But you'll have done it in two different clubs.
Yeah, okay. So soulless own
win
plumps for Man City over what's the lifestyle in Barca or Real Madrid.
Oh, well, if we're talking about lifestyle, then absolutely. I mean,
we're talking about everything. I ask you everything. It's like you went to City. Give me the glory. Hook it to my veins.
Well, football is quite important when it comes to.
I'm an imperialist Death Star.
I am an imperialist Death Star. Yeah. OTB
AM with Gillette. We don't just play the game; we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear, all backed by above-and-beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.